Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
A tip of my hat to the Mid-America Crop Life Association for holding the Obamas accountable for their new organic White House garden. Now, I've always been against organic foods. If I wanted to ingest something a hippie picked, I would eat an auto harp. So I was glad that Mid-America Crop Life sent the first family a letter warning them to consider using crop protection products like pesticides and to recognize the importance and value of America's current agricultural technologies. Exactly. Without those technologies, we wouldn't have Monsanto's Roundup Ready soybeans, which are resistant to the toxic herbicide glyphosate. If we don't douse our crops with glyphosate, how will the runoff get into our fish? Now, these are some people who love the taste of glyphosate.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. He's green, so don't make him angry. You wouldn't like him when he's angry. Here he is, Mike Novak. And they pay me for this, folks. Okay.
How sad are we when that makes us laugh?
It still makes us
laugh. Every time we hear it.
And it's still slightly embarrassing, but...
Oh, yeah, it's totally embarrassing. On so many levels.
I know, but the funny, we're trying to do it in the recording studio and I couldn't keep a straight face, and so...
That's why we left it. That's...
Whoops.
You know what? And it's a good thing that we're laughing here, because otherwise we'd be crying. You know, it's... Except you got your iPhone.
I do.
Up
and we
running.
Brought it back to life.
She was smacking it with a hammer here.
Almost.
Just before we go, she said, "Darn you!
Breathe,
come breathe,
breathe,
clear,
exactly.
And she did it.
I did some networking last night. I wanted to make sure it was working because people said they were going to be tuning in this morning.
Because that's the way Heather works. She does her networking till about 2 a.m. on Saturday night, so that all those people.
That are probably still comatose.
Exactly. Who say they're going to listen to the show the next morning.
I found some people who sell green products for children and have ways of reducing your electric bill. And so I was handing out a lot of cards last night. Here you go. Here you go. Here you go.
You got cards?
I do.
Wow.
I have WCPT cards. I do not have Mike Novak Show cards. Why is that?
Because I didn't make any.
Then we couldn't find any 100% recycled paper with seeds inside. And
well, see what I do with my cards, just so there's no waste. When I'm running out the door, I print up a dozen, you know, just to take with me. They're all. It's none of these boxes of. You know what happened when I was in high school, and they give you your high school photo.
Mm-hmm.
I had 500 of them. I think I gave away about 12. And for years, in fact, I still think there's a box of high school photos sitting in a drawer somewhere
in my house.
Nice.
I'd love to see your high school photo.
Oh.
What year did you graduate high school?
I'm not going to tell you that.
Oh, come on.
All right. This is scary. 1971.
Oh, that's not scary. That's a Oh, you might not want me to say that. But it's the same year my dad graduated, and my mom graduated in 70.
There you go.
So you're technically old enough to be my dad.
That's good. All right, that's all the time we have, folks. I'm going to go cry in a corner. I'm going into fetal position right now.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. You know,
life
moves on.
I was just at a birthday party for a woman who's 90 years young. You're a baby, my friend. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, compared to a woman who's 90, yeah.
Well.
Which is your grandmother.
Yes.
Well, come on. Is she listening? Or does she?
I don't know. We kept her out.
She got Rick Hogan on right now?
No. She tunes in. Well, it was her husband that worked in radio before I was born, so she's very proud that I'm a producer because that's what he used to do. So she loves tuning in when she can. But we did keep her out till about 2 in the morning last night. So
you kept a 90-year-old woman
out there. She was going. She had her party pants on. She did great.
Yeah, you know what? I do know your family, so.
Oh, she was tired at the end of the night. We were looking at her like, "You okay, Gran? I'm ready for bed, sweetie." I'm like, "Okay, we'll take you home." But I assure you, the Moose Club of River Grove, Illinois, never saw a 90th birthday like that one.
Moose.
Yeah, it's the moose. The Loyal Order of the Moose.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Lots going on today, as always. In a second. We're going to do a follow-up on Logan Square Kitchen. Now, I'm not going to have Zena Murray with me this morning, but I got a feeling she's going to be with me in the future because the fun never stops with the Chicago Health Department. And now we will add yet another agency in there to make everybody's, well, make Zena's life miserable. It's just unbelievable. I'll get into that in a.
I was going to say, what's the second agency?
Oh, the second agency is the Department of Business Affairs.
Oh dear Lord.
So yeah, first it's health, and now it's business affairs, and they still can't seem to figure out how to handle licensing for a shared use kitchen. And this is after the new ordinance passed in the city of Chicago, which took place, which took effect rather on September 1st. So that would have been a few days ago, and everything was supposed to be hunky dory, and now it's not. And we'll talk about that in a second. I want to get to something. Well, okay, let me do this first, so let people know what's going on. We might talk a little bit about Landreth Seed Company. And I became aware of this just the other day as Twitter and Facebook began to explode among horticultural types and gardening types about this venerable American seed company, which has been around since, now get this, 1784.
Now that's old, honey.
That is. and it is woman-owned. They have done interesting things like they have an African-American heritage seed line. They are heirloom seeds, and they're in trouble. Now, remember when we talked about SIDS and how the banksters came and shut SIDS down and you know, handed them a hanky and said, go ahead and cry.
Yeah, too bad.
Sorry. We got to do this. Now we got lawyers doing that, trying to do that to Landreth Seed Company. I was hoping to get the owner of Landreth on the show, Barbara Malera. Now, she's out in Pennsylvania, and I just found out about this in the last couple of days, and sent her a Facebook message. So if anybody happens to know Barbara's number, because I know a lot of you listening have been tweeting about this and Facebooking me about it, and we're all sort of rallying behind this company. They need to sell. Now, I'm trying to remember, or let me look here. Let me read this, because it's very interesting. She writes, and this is what she wrote. My husband Peter and I have been working to restore this historic American company for the past 8 years because it is the most historically important American small business in existence. It is the only American company still operating daily that existed when this country became a nation. Its founders were honorable men who helped establish and guide the agricultural and horticultural industries of the country in the 1700s, the 1800s, and the 1900s. On Wednesday, August 31st, which was just a few days ago, the company's accounts were frozen by a garnishment order initiated by a Baltimore law firm. If this garnishment order is not satisfied within the next 30 days, Landreth will cease to exist and a part of America's history will be lost forever. Now, here's the catchphrase, Heather. She writes, I need to sell 1 million 2012 catalogs to satisfy this garnishment and the cascade of other indebtedness which this order has now initiated. Doesn't that sound like an Austin Powers thing?
Yeah.
You need to sell 1 million catalogs.
Yeah.
But
that sounds like
Dr. Lot,
Evil
yeah,
had something to do with that.
A lot sadder, though, than that. So what's happened, to the credit of the people on the social media, they have rallied. And this has been going on all over the place. If you're on Twitter, type in the hashtag. That would be, you know, and a hashtag, of course, if you're not on Twitter, is a pound sign on a keyboard. Hashtag Save Landreth. Now, I believe Mr. Brown Thumb is behind that, because I linked to an article, couple articles he wrote about Landreth. And if you go to my website, you can see the links, and you can see the link to Landreth Seed Company, and you can see the link to the Facebook posts, and there are various Facebook sites that have sprung up. Save Landreth Seed Company, order their 2012 catalog. Now, the catalog costs $5. And if everybody puts in $5, and we can get a million people to put in $5, we're done. We got it done. I know it's easier said than done, but folks are starting to do that, and I'm hoping the response is overwhelming. And so I'm going to initiate it here on this show, too. Go to Landreth Seed Company, buy a catalog, order a catalog online, or call them. You can go to the link that's on my this week's show on the Mike Novak Show, and that's at MikeNovak.net, and I'm going to try to get Barbara Malera on the show next week, if I can, to talk about this so we can get a little more insight into it. And what I would ask right now of my friends who are on Facebook and Twitter and who actually want to call, 773-838-9278, 773-838-WCPT. If you want to tell me why you think the company is so good, have you ordered from them? What do you like best? Tweet it, Facebook it, call in, and we'll talk about that. But I hope that some way we can help this company get. You know, it's a tribute to the company that even some of their competitors are saying, yeah, go buy a Landreth catalog.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just got a tweet here from...
I have to admit, their website's making me hungry.
What on the website's catching your eye?
Well,
there?
The potatoes and the fresh kinds of garlic. And I'm like, ooh, look at that fresh. I could make this with it. I can make that with it. Now I want Italian food.
And this is the time of year to plant garlic.
Really?
Yeah. You plant garlic so that it matures over the winter, and then you harvest it in the following summer.
I have to admit, it wasn't until recent that I learned the real wonders of fresh garlic. I used to just get the jars of minced garlic. What a fool I was. A fool, I tell you.
So, and I've got folks tweeting already. Forever Flavor 6. Hey, thanks. Shout out. And thanks for putting that up there. And I'm sure more will respond. But I'd love to hear what's your favorite thing on the catalog. Send us a message. And we will...
How does a company survive nearly 200 years, though? That's the other thing. You obviously have to have really fine product if you can do that.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the interesting thing, too. They bought the company. Barbara and her husband bought it 8 years ago, and it makes me wonder what the situation was then. and obviously they wanted to keep it going and continue to provide heirloom seeds, which can't tell you we need to hold on to our seeds and
especially the ones that, as our opening clip, you know, that aren't Monsanto resistant mutant
exactly.
Come and get you in the night seeds.
So we will talk more about that. And like I said, I'm going to try to get Barbara on the show if I can in the next week. She friended me on Facebook overnight, which is kind of cool. So I wrote her back real quick. I said, hey, want to be on the show this morning? And I know it's kind of short notice, and we'll see what happens, and maybe I'll be able to get a hold of her this week. In the second hour, Jerry Adelman, president and CEO of Openlands, is going to be here to talk about the grand opening of the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve. I went to see it the other day. We've got a little slideshow video of it on the homepage, MikeNovak.net. This is a cool place. This place is, on, you know, where Fort Sheridan is, along Lake Michigan. It's an ecosystem of ravines along the lake, and that is unique, perhaps. It may be the only one in existence, certainly in this shape, and it's being restored and will continue to be restored. But the grand opening of the preserve is next Saturday, and folks, you will like this. Bring the family, bring the kids. Don't expect to go swimming, but do expect to hike and see the wonders of nature and bluffs. And the lake and wildflowers and birds and habitat. Great stuff. So Jerry Adelman's here in the second hour to talk about that. And last but not least, David Cleverton from Kinnickinnick Farm in Caledonia. We've had him on. He's an organic farmer. I called him yesterday. It was pretty funny, Heather. I get a hold of him. You know, just confirming. Making sure we're on the same page here. I'm going to be on the show, and he says, can you make it fast? I said, okay, what's going on? He said, I hope I'm not interrupting anything. He said, yeah, you are. And I said, what? He says, well, I got a bunch of kids here, and we're milking a goat. I said, okay, I'll make it quick. But he's going to talk to us about milking goats and kids, but also how weather has affected his farm, his organic business. In the last few years, he says it's been very, very interesting. And I can't wait to hear it, which reminds me that Rick DeMaio will be here at the bottom of the hour, this first hour, to talk about even more hurricanes. Well, actually, tropical storm. Tropical storm, mm-hmm. Sorry. Bad weather for different parts of the country. And I wonder if he will take back anything he said last week.
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think he will. That kind of guy.
I think he was right. I think it was overhyped and oversold and overbroadcasted.
On the other hand, look at what's happened in Vermont. Looks what, you know,
that's
New Hampshire.
All
and
after, though.
Yeah, but it was all part of the storm. Yeah. I don't know either. You know. I think he was. He had some real good points to make, and we'll talk to Rick DeMaio about the weather then. You kind of looked. You were looking at something and kind of looked at me funny.
I got friends in Sturgeon Bay who are tuning in, Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. So I'm getting people from all around the place, which always makes me feel good. But apparently, a little factoid about garlic I didn't know, which was tweeted to us from Forever Flavor 6.
Yep.
Garlic is frost resistant. That true?
Well, how do you think that you can keep it going?
Apparently. All right. I didn't know that. It's a wonder. It's a vegetable, right? Is it a vegetable, garlic?
Is it an herb or no? It's an allium, so I would consider it more of an herb.
All right, well, it's a wonder herb, and it's a good one.
Uh huh.
We like herbs.
But garlic, yeah. The wonders of garlic and the fact that there are so many different varieties of garlic is really interesting. You know, we have to do a shout out also to our firefighters in Chicago.
Yes.
Because last Sunday, after this show, Heather took me out to the fire department. Where did we go exactly?
We went to the firehouse, Tower Ladder 54.
Tower Ladder 54.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, guys, hope you're listening. The meal was awesome.
Don't they eat great?
They do eat great.
I've never had a bad meal there. It's so good. They can, like, and then they try to outdo each other, so it just continues to get better.
Not only that, they let me bring food back here for Mike Sanders and Bedalia. And then I got some stir fry. Yeah, well, we got some extra stir fry here.
Like, we ate it. We don't eat it. We're going to throw it out, you know.
It's like a 28-pound bag.
I know. It was huge.
Of stir fry. I haven't eaten stir fry all week. It's awesome.
I was going to say, and how does it taste?
It tastes wonderful because those guys know how to cook.
They do. Oh.
So I love Chicago's Finest, especially here on the south side. They're at 47th and Pulaski.
Yep. They have a lovely garden and koi pond. They're really great guys.
Although they have a koi with a mutant,
head. I don't know. Is that
Brainiac?
Some kind of funny goldfish. I don't know if that's a koi.
I don't know if it's koi. It might be a goldfish.
I think it is some kind of goldfish. But yeah.
But it still has, honest to goodness, it looks like Megamind. Yes. They ought to call it Megamind.
The Megamind goldfish.
And I was thinking, what did they do? Put some glyphosate in the pond? Some Roundup Ready something?
Yeah, no. They've tried. Well, we sent them to Pesci's. They got a lot of their gear over at Pesci's, and they got some plants, and they got a new pump for the koi pond, and they even got a nice little fountain that they plugged in. And it, you know, the funny thing was, though, each shift apparently likes the fountain at different heights. So one time you'll drive by and it's
like
shooting real high, and then another day you'll drive by and it's just real. It's just this, you know, lovely little trickle.
That's like when I was in college, and my first roommate in college and I did not agree on what the temperature of the room should be. And he would go and turn up the heat and close the window, and then I would go and open the window and
turn down the heat.
And and we just had this battle. It just went back and forth. Oh, well. All right, one other thing, and I'm going to get to a little bit on Logan Square and Zena Murray, Logan Square Kitchen. Am I allowed to tell people on the air that I'm looking for a car?
The show is called The Mike Novak Show. I think you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Outside of breaking FCC law and regulation.
I don't think there's an FCC rule against saying that my 1996 Chevy Lumina bit the dust.
Yeah.
How
many miles you get out of that baby? Yeah,
about 165,000.
Good for you.
Well, actually, I got it from Sanders. And so he got a bunch of miles out of it. And then I got a bunch of miles out of it. But I took the bus this morning, the old Pulaski 53 and then the 53A, which, you know, it's not that bad. It's a bit of a hike. It takes over an hour. It takes like an hour 15.
Wow.
Yeah,
I know. That's early. You got up early.
I got up way early today.
No wonder you were so bushy-tailed when I got here.
I know, because
I'm ricocheting off the walls trying to wake up, and you're like, morning, let's go, blah, blah, blah.
I know. Yep. So, you know, just hinting that anybody knows anybody's got a nice used car.
Or a real good deal on a hybrid.
Or a real good deal on, anything like that. You can let me know because I'm carless at the moment. And I don't know. My problem is that it's not just about coming down here. I go all over the area doing talks and doing other things. And every now and then I need a vehicle. And I know people are going to say this, they're going to say it, go with Igo, or sometimes the way that those don't exactly work out for the kinds of things I do. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there. Getting back to Zena Murray. Now, I mentioned that one of the things you should know, on my homepage, MikeNovak.net, we've put up a little icon and a link. And if you go to this week's show, you're going to see the video, and you're going to see Bob McKeer there in the video. And right below it says, and featuring, can the Chicago Department of Public Health be transformed? And there's a petition there that you can sign to get some new rules instituted in the Chicago Department of Public Health, which Zena Murray from the Logan Square Kitchen started this last year, and she's got over 500 signatures already. And I want to encourage even more people. You don't have to be a citizen of Chicago to sign it. Anybody can sign it. Anybody can help fight for local food in the city. And so I thought, you know, Zena, that's great. You got the petition. We're on our way. And then I got another email from her the other day. And now, see, she's been dealing with the Department of Health before. Now she's dealing with the Chicago Department of Business Affairs. So Zena writes in her blog, and I'm not going to read the whole thing because you can link to it on my website. Go to this week's show. And she wrote this on September 1st. And she says, Chicago's new shared kitchen user ordinance takes effect today. It's written to regulate just two food facilities in Chicago out of over 20,000. Our experience over the past 2 years is unfortunately remaining consistent with a heavy hand and regulations that would be front page news if restaurants had to live with them. And she lists some of the things that the new ordinance is imposing. Now, this was supposed to clean things up. This was supposed to streamline things. This was supposed to be to help the wave of new businesses like shared use kitchens, where people, small businesses, can come in and use the kitchen because they can't afford to build their own. This is the new the new food industry.
I was going to say it's a new idea in the industry, mm-hmm. which need everything has to grow and change, or it won't continue to flourish.
And one thing you should know about Zena's Kitchen in Logan Square is that it's spotless.
Oh, it looks stunning, too. The dining room, and it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful facility.
It is. Gorgeous. It's gold LEED certified. They went to dumpsters and found wooden doors that they've put up in beautiful ways, used for wainscot and for other kinds of things. It's a gorgeous facility and immaculate. Absolutely immaculate. Remember last week how the Department of Public Health called her in and fined her.
And took her to court.
Took her to court. Well, she went to court to fight it. They just fined her. They figured she'd just pay the bill. And she said, no, I'm not going to just pay the bill. I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't violate anything. Went to court, had the fine dismissed. I was there. I was in court. I watched it. The judge looked at the papers and went, well, I don't see anything wrong here, so I'm going to dismiss the fine. Well, the problem is that she needs to have a new inspection because the old inspection says she has fines. And the way it works is they do an inspection, then they post it. You have to put it in there, and you have to let people who want to use the facility know that the last inspection found violations. Here's the problem. The fine got dismissed, but the posting stands until she can get a new inspection.
Yeah, and the judge said they couldn't do anything about that.
Well, yeah, so the judge won't do that. So, once again, at the mercy of the city. Now, she writes about the new ordinance that took effect. And she writes several bullet points. Number one, the business license will take the form of a picture ID, so owner and license must always be in kitchen during production. If restaurants had to do this, the owner would have to be in kitchen for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day or be closed. Sick? Funeral? Your business has to shut down, even if you have employees with sanitation certification.
What if you own more than one restaurant? What if you own a chain of restaurants or a bunch of small independent restaurants?
Well, shared kitchens, because obviously
this is only happening
to the shared kitchen. So, surprise! Two, want to grow and have employees? They have to get their own license, $330 per pop. No other food businesses are required to license chefs individually. Three, license must travel with you to remote locations. Let's imagine the chefs at Lollapalooza posting their business licenses out at the concert. How about every caterer that has a gig at the Chicago Cultural Center or Public Library? Four, both kitchen and user must maintain records of dates and times every business used the kitchen for the last 2 years and make records immediately available to any inspector. We asked for it to read within a reasonable time or upon request, but no go. And she goes on. I mean, this is now the Department of Business Affairs that's putting these onerous restrictions on the kitchen.
So what, the health department couldn't do it? Now they're getting a little flack, so they just kicked it to
their
buddies?
Well, you know what it is? What it is, it's just different departments and different parts of the bureaucracy. It's one of the things you got to realize is bureaucracy is bureaucracy. You know, even in Washington, when the politicians get elected or they get voted out of office, the bureaucracy remains to a large extent. Same thing in the city of Chicago. You know, the heads of the...
Can I use this mic as a bludgeoning device on my head, please?
Yeah. Well, you got to realize that it's the ones at the top of the ticket that go. For instance, I look at Suzanne Malik McKenna, friend of mine, who's going to be on the show, and we're going to talk about how she got relieved of her job as head of the Department of the Environment. When you're high profile, you're more likely to have your head chopped off.
Mm-hmm.
All right? But a lot of the people within the agencies stick around forever, and they get their own fiefdoms, and they get their own way of doing things. And you know what? A shared-use kitchen is a scary thing to some people because they don't understand it. They don't know how it works.
Well, that's usually how most good things get squashed, because other people just don't understand.
Yeah.
That's from my experience.
So what I want you to do, and I'm not even... She names the woman who she's been dealing with.
They can go and read that on their own.
They can go read it. We may name names next week or the week after. But it's there. You can find out, because she also puts her... I think she's got her phone number and... email address, I don't know. But go read this, because if you thought last week was bad with having the Department of Health send out a bogus violation notice, now you've got public affairs doing basically the same thing. And it just makes your head spin, and it makes you wonder whether we're going to get any movement, you know, whether folks are paying attention. You know, right now in city council, they're looking at the a new urban ag ordinance. Can't wait to see the restrictions on that one. I'm sorry.
It's not like, can't wait to see the good urban ag work. Nope, can't wait to see the restrictions.
Can't wait to see
that
how
that glass is a skosh half empty to you there, ain't it, Mr. Nolan?
That's right. Can't wait to see how they chop.
How they screwed this one up.
I was thinking, you know, how they chop us off at the knees on that one, too. So, there you have it. I would go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show, and you can read all about it.
I'm also putting it on the Mike Novak Show Facebook page, so please come and like our show. And I posted it on Twitter for under my at Mike Now. So
good,
it's there to be read.
And I hope some people take advantage of it. Somebody's messaging me, but every time I click on it, I can't find it. So how do I, you know, whatever. Okay. This is the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. I suppose we will have to get to some weather here eventually. So this is where I do the dun 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 dun. Who are you going to call? Clay Busters. Getting a bag of cotton burr compost from Back to Nature is like calling up your own clay busting squad. This all-natural product is made from composted cotton burrs, which will break up your soil better than any proton pack. Can you? I don't even know what a proton pack is. Maybe I'd ask Heather, but she's getting Rick DeMaio on the phone. And what's a proton pack?
It is the prop from the Ghostbusters film that they would wear on their backs with
those
lasers to catch the ghosts.
That's, you know.
You don't cross the streams.
See,
I watched a lot of TV in the 80s.
I did too, but I've forgotten.
See, my brain was still fresh and absorbing things.
They're not burned into my brain.
Oh, that was huge. I was 7 years old when that movie came out, and if you didn't have that at your sleepover, you were nobody.
All I can remember from that movie, tell you the truth, is what's her name?
Sigourney Weaver.
Oh. Sorry. It was like...
Oh, you like a little Sigourney there, eh?
And a little...
She's pretty.
...white gown and blowing in the wind.
It was red.
Was it red?
Oh, yeah, red.
See, I don't even remember that right. But it was flowing.
Mm-hmm. Flowing gown, 80s eyeliner, and the hair.
And 80s hair.
The wild hair, yes.
Yep. Back to nature.
He slimed me.
Anyway, it will condition your soil, too. Cottonburg Compost from Back to... Do you think they're going to pay me for this ad? Is this, like, a done deal?
Don't ask me that when I'm drinking my coffee. I'm going to snort it out my nose.
Don't spit it up. Please don't do that. All right.
Don't make me snort laugh.
Cottonburg Compost from Back to Nature. But, it's a four-minute commercial.
Everyone's going to remember. But the weird thing is now they're going to free associate Back to Nature Compost
with Ghostbusters. Well, just remember... Claybusters. That's what we're talking about.
And that's they do a great job.
Did I mention that Cottonburg Compost from Back to Nature is rich in protein, which is the primary food source for beneficial soil organisms, which convert nutrients into a form that plants can use? Cottonburg Compost also accepts and retains moisture like a champ, unlike peat moss. Back to Nature has been composting since 1979. They're the largest producers of composted cotton burrs in the southwestern United States. To find out more about Cotton Burr Compost and other fine products from Back to Nature, at backtonaturecompost.com, that's where you want to go. Dr. Wally at Pesci's and I both love them, so give them a try. Back to Nature products are available at Countryside Garden Center in Crystal Lake, Illinois, Paradigm Gardens in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, and The Barn in Cary, Illinois. Back to Nature. Life doesn't start with the seed. It starts with the soil.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Late summer, early fall is one of the best times of the year to plant trees. Ah, but it's not as easy as that. Is your new tree deciduous or conifer? Exactly what species and cultivar? Where do you want to site it? What is the soil like? Do you know how large it will grow? To get answers to these questions, you might want to consult a certified arborist from the Care of Trees. While you're at it, you might have questions about your existing trees. Do you see roots wrapping around the base of your tree? Does your tree have cuts or cracks at the base? Is your tree planted too deep? And that's a problem that happens all the time. Is your tree planted too close to your home? We all have seen those front porches where you can't get in the door because the arborvitae and the junipers are crowding out everything else. I've seen them. Solutions such as mulching, root pruning, growth regulators, and the use of specialized supersonic air tools are used to preserve your landscaping and trees. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
You can have a beautiful lawn and be kind to the environment, too. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. A few simple changes in your lawn care practices, like using Milorganite Goof-Proof Organic Fertilizer, can result in a carpet of green safe for your kids and pets. Start by raising the mowing height of your lawn, if you haven't done so already. Taller grass is better able to compete with the weeds. Mow often, removing only one-third of the total height, and leave the clippings on the lawn. Consider using a push or electric mower. It's good for the waistline and the environment. Further improve your lawn's health and greatly reduce weed problems with proper fertilization. Milorganite's organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn your lawn, even in hot, dry weather. Plus, you don't need to water it in. And the non-staining iron helps maintain the deep green color even in the heat of summer. So join the professionals and home gardeners who've trusted Milorganite for over 80 years. Use Milorganite for better results naturally. Available where garden supplies are sold.
Ghosts.
Hello, Ghostbusters.
They're real.
You do?
They're mean.
You have?
They're here. Ghostbusters.
Hey, anybody see a ghost?
They catch the ghost that won't stay dead.
Ghostbusters!
They're armed. They're dangerous.
Try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
All right, that's bad. Okay, all right, important safety tip. Thanks, Egon.
They're professionals.
Oh, I'm the chairman of the largest paranormal removal company in America.
Did you see it?
They're all that stand between you and the end of the world.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportions.
Real wrath of God type stuff.
Sick.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the sky.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Your girlfriend lives in the corner penthouse of Spook Central.
You
want
this body?
Okay. I couldn't resist. Heather found the trailer for the original movie, and we just had to throw that up there. And she just got interrupted, too, as she was trying to watch it by a phone call. How sad. Let's go to line one. And I know the, a guy who remembers the original movie is a meteorologist, Rick DeMaio.
Yeah, you know what? But that's still wasn't one of my favorite. I was always kind of turned off by the... by the goofiness of it, but...
What, you wanted real scary ghost stuff? Is that what you wanted?
I guess I'm more of a Night of the Living Dead. I kind of like when the little girl started eating her mother.
No. I don't like those. I like the Ghostbusters kind. I can't do the Freddy Halloween slasher flicks. Nope.
No, but I'm not even a Halloween slasher type, Heather. I like you know, people devouring other people. I think
you like zombies.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Zombies.
Night of the Living, you know.
Zombies give me the willies.
Yeah.
I can watch a zombie movie once every 5 or 6 years. That works for me.
I did see that Dawn of the Dead.
But Dawn of the Dead was terrible.
Oh, it would just gross me out. But the funny thing
Which one, though?
That was the zombie movie that came out a couple years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
No. The original Dawn of the Dead was... was about 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay,
they
remade
it.
Now, that I saw.
But I saw Shaun of the Dead.
That's what I was about to say, because seeing that movie just made it more worth it to see Shaun of the Dead, because I laughed so hard. That movie was so funny.
Yeah, but it was still really violent.
Well, yeah.
Parts were, but I mean, it was zombie movies making fun of zombie movies. You know what I mean? So it just
Zombie Land is supposed to be really good. I haven't seen Zombie Land.
I think it's one of those that, like, you know.
Wait a second. I think I might have seen it.
I don't know.
But I think, Mike, your whole point of getting that trailer up was just to get the visualization of Sigourney Weaver.
I was trying to get trying to get that, work that back, but it's gone.
I'm sure Sigourney Weaver would like to see that again.
Well, they're making a third one. They're making a third.
That's what Heather said.
They
accidentally, I'm hipper than I know because I'm right on top of pop culture.
One.
They're making a third with the same cast.
Yes, from my understanding, I will double check all this right now. But yeah,
so are they the ghosts in this one?
I don't know, but I know Harold Ramis is not as svelte as he was of yore. He's still hysterically funny.
But
Egon, I remember, was a tall, skinny, brainy guy, and I'm not so sure about the skinny part anymore.
He's a Glencoe guy, isn't he? Or Wilmette?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, somewhere up there. Yeah, I've met him a few times down at the station. He's a very, very, very nice person. It's like you meet him once and you feel like you've known him forever. So
Well, I will worship him for always for Caddyshack.
He
was the director of Caddyshack. Mm-hmm. I believe he was the director, and that is just cinema gold, that movie.
Every 14-year-old in the country... See, that's what I saw. Every 14-year-old boy in the country is a fan of Caddyshack. So what's wrong with you, Heather?
I know. I love it. Are you kidding? I love that movie. I think it's hysterical. It's a classic.
And Rick DeMaio, I'm going to ask you a question about last week because you said some pretty controversial things on the show.
I don't know. Are they controversial or are they pointed?
Ooh. Well, I assume you're standing by your guns.
Well, you know what? I think everybody learns from natural disasters particularly a day or two after they occur. That's when you really begin to see some of the, some of the aftermath. And, you know, some of the, Mike, some of the insurance losses right now, at least insured insurance losses from Irene are estimated somewhere between $3 and $5 billion damage. Okay, so you can't argue with that. You can't argue the fact that a lot of people were, basically without power. 40 people died. You had nearly $500 million in damage, close to $1 billion in the Bahamas, about $600 million in insured losses in Puerto Rico. Again, you know, it's kind of interesting because the following morning, what did the Today Show have on with Matt Lauer? They had a roundtable with Al Roker and Jim Cantore, and Matt Lauer said, was the storm overhyped? And it kind of sounded like the same questions I was asking. Mm-hmm. And then CNN, Anderson Cooper had the same thing, and they also had some. So I think the discussion was needed because if that was what the public was expressing, then you have to talk about it. That doesn't mean that you reach a conclusion. I think that means that you have a spirited debate on it. And then I had five of my nine classes that I'm teaching this semester. One of their assignments was to get an article, particularly relating to aviation, and look at it from a standpoint of what, you know, air traffic control, airports, you know, shut down, airlines canceling flights, and other articles as well. And then I want you to tell me whether or not you thought it was hyped or overhyped, or, well, I mean, every storm is hyped, but I think with the word is overhyped. And it was amazing, Mike. It was about halfway down the line. 50% thought yes, 50% thought no. And what I liked most about the responses from the students is they all had very, very good answers backing up why they thought it was. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where you want to end up on a debate is, you know, in some areas it wasn't, and in some areas it was. And, you know, case in point, I think by Monday afternoon we realized how devastating the flooding was in Vermont. And even people from the Weather Channel said, you know what, we missed it. Even though we knew there was going to be a lot of rain inland, I don't think we put two and two and two together, which was the Green Mountains, have you ever been up there, are
yes.
North-south range, okay? The rivers up in Vermont are not very wide. They're generally very narrow creeks. The only river that's really a fairly wide river is the Connecticut River, which basically splits Vermont and New Hampshire. You didn't hear a lot about flooding in New Hampshire, did you?
No,
that's because the rivers the mountains are located, or at least situated, more so northeast to southwest, and the rain was actually falling more so over Vermont, hitting the mountains, and pretty much enhancing the flow due to what we call upslope flow, and the water basically had nowhere to go. And it was interesting because when you hear about a state being completely flooded out, when you think of the size of Vermont, it's pretty small. It's almost like we had flooded in northeast Illinois. That's pretty much about it, the size of it. That's not taking away anything to what happened up there. That was a 500-year event, and there are some towns and rivers that saw flooding that they've never seen before. And, of course, if the only way to get from one place to another is through a small bridge, obviously, you're looking at 2 or 3 months down the road. So without a doubt, I think this hurricane, which really became a severe tropical storm, did a tremendous amount of damage. And I think the one thing that people are trying to establish here is at what point did it become a tropical storm? Because I was talking to my uncle who lives about a mile in from the shore of Great South Bay in Long Island. And oddly enough, he and my brother, who also live about a mile inland, were reclassified as a flood zone because there were several small inlets close by to them, and you would like this story, Mike. Several small inlets that were dredged and recently developed, and now the coastline actually moved in about a half mile based on the fact that that particular area, which was at one point a marsh, is now a dredged inlet, and therefore the coastline now moved inland about a half mile, and therefore my uncle and my brother were now declared part of a flood zone. and a floodplain, and had to get more insurance to cover their, you know, potential losses. So I was talking to my uncle, and I'll get to the point very quickly here. He says with a hurricane, a Category 1 hurricane, your deductible is $10,000 with a Category 1 hurricane. Mm-hmm. With a tropical storm, your deductible is $500.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which would you want that particular storm to be classified as, a tropical storm or a hurricane?
And that depends on when the National Weather Service upgrades or downgrades.
That's
and it's
exactly
all
right.
And it suddenly
exactly
becomes
right.
suddenly it becomes very political, doesn't
it? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And it didn't become a tropical storm until 9 a.m. Yet the insurance company can come back and say, well, the report says 8:55 p.m. or 8:55 a.m. That's still a hurricane. I'm sorry, sir. You have $6,000 of losses. We can't pay out. Yeah, a big, big thing. There was a fear that...
Well, but what if I'd say first is don't dredge. Leave if you got marsh, leave it. That's part of...
Well, yeah, but... And I was talking to my brother who lives in Brooklyn, who is about a block away from Zone A, and there's this large area of development taking place in Brooklyn underneath the Brooklyn Bridge and the Manhattan Bridge, and the developers were screaming at the city of New York and Michael Bloomberg to please put us in the evacuation zone because they wanted to get people out. And if you are in an evacuation zone and you are damaged by a hurricane or flooded, then you can claim more insurance losses as opposed to if you weren't. It becomes very, very political, Mike.
Wow.
The estimated number or estimated value of damage that they thought they were going to see in the New York City area due to the hurricane was close to $30 billion. That's what was feared going into this, $30 billion. And obviously it's way down. It's probably closer more to like maybe $2 or $3 billion, if that. So, you know, this is not taken away from, you know, whether it was a storm or not. But that morning, Matt Lauer, you know, looked straight at Jim Cantore and said, Jim, we've been covering hurricanes for a long time here. Not one reporter along the Virginia, Maryland, or New Jersey coast was talking about winds greater than 75 miles per hour. Now, from what I understand, they have to be 75. Was this or was this not a hurricane? And he said, well, there were winds above the surface that they were feared coming down to the surface. And he said, but that's not the surface. That's above the surface. And he said, was this or was this not a hurricane? And he said, we're going with what the National Hurricane Center is saying right now. And you know what this comes down to? And I was talking to a friend of mine who works for a very large insurance company in Chicago that does a lot of post-analysis of storms. And after Katrina came through, and after Andrew, and after a bunch of different storms in Florida back in 2004, 2005, Allstate pulled out, State Farm pulled out. Now you have all these different insurance companies rewriting policies based on so many different factors. In some states, FEMA helps write them. Some states, counties help write them. Some states, municipalities help write them. You can have an entire two-hour show. And even the person I was talking to, who's an expert on this, said the way that they define coastland along the United States shoreline and how you are affected by that and how and what kind of insurance you can get is ridiculous. They have some areas that have insurance that's just totally due to flooding. They have insurance that's totally just due to wind. And in some areas, if you're in a condo on the third or fourth floor, you don't get the flood insurance, you get the wind insurance, but your deductible is $15,000. And there's a lot of people that said, forget about it. And there's some people who need flood insurance, and the flood insurance is so high. And it's a very, very complicated structure when it comes down to how storms are classified and how that works out with, you know, what actually eventually happens.
Well, we're looking at Tropical Storm Lee
right.
in the Gulf,
mm-hmm.
and the way you're talking, since it's not a hurricane, some of those people won't get the kind of insurance protection that they need, even though they might get 12 or 15 inches of rain.
Right, and they've already got 10 inches. But I think most of those places down there have flood insurance because you almost have to. So I think they're going to be okay. But the bottom line is, I think what it comes down to is the way we categorize hurricanes is antiquated. We need to get rid of that system. We need a separate system for wind and a separate system for flooding. And I think it's going to be 20 or 30 years before you actually get something that actually works. Now, that's stepping away from whether the storm was hyped or overhyped. I think for some areas it probably was. And if I would take back anything what I said last week, I was like, you know what? Maybe I should have focused on the fact that this isn't going to be a hurricane anymore, but it's still going to be a nasty-ass tropical storm, potentially capable of producing, you know, catastrophic flooding. And when you hear about the Passaic River flooding in New Jersey, that river always floods, always floods. And my parents up in Pennsylvania, down the street from them, people were without power for 4 days because they had so many trees come down because they had record rainfall in August. And the trees had nowhere to go, where the trees were basically in, you know, somewhat soggy soil. So it's a very interesting conversation. I think that's why you have to raise that question, because it makes people think twice about, you know, how we're going about these storms.
Well, then that takes us to Chicago, and we don't have nearly the problems. What's going to happen? It's getting cool.
Yeah, you know, we traded cumulus clouds for stratocumulus, so we had our 2 days of 90s and 4 days of 80s. So cool today. We'll call it mostly cloudy with a little bit of sun coming through the air. It'll come cloudy again this afternoon. Near 70 today, probably mid-60s tomorrow with cloudy skies and lake-effect rain showers. You haven't heard that in a while. Then it gets beautiful out the rest of the week with temperatures generally in the low 70s. But, dealing with Tropical Storm Lee and now Hurricane Katia, which sounds like a Russian belly dancer for some reason, how those storms interact with each other the next couple of days is going to be very interesting to see. So we'll try to figure that all out. When we talk again next week, Mike.
I'm putting you in charge of changing the rating system for hurricanes and how it affects the insurance company.
It's been that way for probably 10 years. And just in the last 30 seconds we have, Hurricane Katrina was probably a Category 4 wind-wise, but probably a Category 6 from a flood-wise, you know, from a storm surge. So it's something that they need to figure out, because obviously things have become so much more complicated over the last 10 or 20 years.
Always great talking to you. You always have wonderful insight. That's Rick DeMaio. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com or go to my website, MikeNovak.net. You got any TV stuff coming up?
No, thankfully I'll be off the air for a while. I need to concentrate on a lot of schoolwork.
All right, you do that. We'll talk to you next week, Rick.
Okay, see you, Mike.
Bye-bye. In the second hour of the program, Jerry Adelman, who's the president and CEO of Open Lands, is here. We're going to talk about the grand opening of the Open Lands Lakeshore Preserve. You want to stick around. That's going to be a lot of fun.
With an arrow through the middle of a name that looks like Joe. A young girl's looking at the makeup in the mirror and puts a little gold ring on her toe. I gotta say 1, 2, 3 more things before I go on.
Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Heather, one of the things I've noticed is that we've been getting some response to our call to get folks to save Landreth Seed Company.
And we did get a phone number request from someone who does not have computer access. So if you want to call and request your catalog, the number is 1-800-654-2407 for Landreth Seeds.
Give that number out. In fact, let me jot that down. Let's make sure we've got that here so we can give out the number again in the case anybody else wants to call.
It's, I don't have a pen.
Right here. Use mine. 1-800. Okay. 1-800-654-2407.
That number again,
1-800-654-2407.
2407.
And we've already got at least one confirmed order. We got at least one person already called.
One order at a time. We're going to save the company.
That's how you do it, one at a time.
That's right, one order at a time. I also got a very interesting Facebook message from Tom Shepard. on this is here on the south side. Now I'm going to have to find it. You know, there we go. You have these. I've got
you
so many windows.
Refresh.
I got so many windows open here. Here we go. And he's with the Southeast Environmental Task Force down there. We got a call pouring in. Oh. Look at this. How about that? He, in regard to my mentioning that Suzanne Malik McKenna is going to be on the show soon, he said, I don't know how to podcast, and I'll probably be in church when you have Suzanne Malik McKenna on. I got to hear what she has to say. And he writes, you already know they're gutting the Department of Environment. Yeah, this is what I hear, Tom, that the city of Chicago might be losing the Department of the Environment. Who knows? I mean, it's kind of hard to say right now. I suppose I could ask the man in the studio here, because you've worked with DOE a lot, and that's Jerry Adelman, who's the president and CEO of Openlands. What do you hear?
Morning, Mike.
I know. Yeah, I don't
That's
even
an
say,
easy question for the first one.
I know. I don't. You know, I'm sorry to sandbag you with that. You know, here you walk in. I didn't even say hello. Did you have a cup of coffee? I go, so what's going on with the Department of the Environment?
Well, I wish I could tell you with some certainty. I really don't know for sure. I mean, Mayor Emanuel said that they're going to be doing a year-long audit and to figure out kind of what the various functions are. Are they best placed within a separate department or divided up among various city agencies? So, you know, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that many people feel that it's very likely that the department as such would be terminated and, again, that there'd be some new structure. But we really don't know, and I mm-hmm. guess we just need to monitor it closely. And what I've asked is that there be transparency, you know, that we really – understand what they're doing, why they're doing it, whatever it may be,
mm-hmm.
restructuring, you know, moving things around. And so many of those functions are critical. And Chicago, you know, has been seen as a national and to some extent world leader, really, in being a green city in all its forms. And so we don't want to lose that, obviously. It's part of the brand of Chicago.
Yeah. And there's always room for improvement, as I have mentioned on the show. But we don't want to backtrack.
Yeah. Now, one thing that did happen just a couple of weeks ago, which I think is very significant, is that the Nature and Wildlife Plan, which was developed in 2006 with the input of, gosh, I don't know, several dozen not-for-profits and various agencies and so forth, but looking at habitat in the city, at issues related to protection, restoration, research, connecting people to nature in the city. That plan, the update was released that kind of gives a scorecard of what's accomplished, what's been accomplished, and then what needs to happen over the next 5 years. And that was released, you know, with Mayor Emanuel's blessing. You know, there's a letter from him in the front of the report. If you go to the Department of Environment website, you can find the plan there. So I think that's really important. I mean, he recognized, again, that this is something that's significant for Chicago. We're the only large city in the country that has this comprehensive, you know, kind of approach to nature in the city, to biodiversity, habitat, and connecting people to that,
well,
enriching their lives.
And that has a lot to do with you, Openlands, Chicago Wilderness, all these pieces of the puzzle we're trying to figure out. We haven't just given up and said, well, it's urban and suburban, not much you can do about it. But we're pulling all the little parts together and trying to analyze how they still operate and how they don't operate
right.
anymore because of the encroachment of humans.
And that's where the research piece is so important. And we actually had a research summit, the Nature and Wildlife Committee, at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Gosh, maybe it was a year and a half or almost 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half. And brought together over 100 scientists and leaders in the field from, you know, many different sectors. But to really kind of step back and say, what don't we know about nature in the city? You know, that we've done a lot to make it difficult for critters, you know,
yeah.
and yet we're on a major flyway. There are all these wonderful resources, these open spaces that we have, our parks and boulevards and lakefront, the river. And so really kind of developed a research agenda, you know, dealing with challenges like mm-hmm. invasive species, you know, what do you do with coyotes in the city?
Well, you know, that's a really, really good point, because of what we've, what our history is to take predators and wipe them out.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we find some that are coming back, maybe, you know, we need to change the way we look at that now and see if there's some kind of some kind of way we can coexist.
Yeah, you know, I have a family house in Lockport where my both sides of my family have lived for many generations, and I do a lot of gardening. I have a lot of rabbits and chipmunks, like, you know, whatever. However, there's a fox den down along the creek, and they had five little foxes this year. And I didn't see a rabbit or a chipmunk until recently. So I suspect maybe they've dispersed now. So again, you've got to look at all the dimensions of, you know, the balance in nature, and what can we do as humans? We've changed so much. What can we do to make those relationships smoother and better for nature and for people?
Well, I think of foxes. For most people, they're kind of like deer. You wouldn't get rid of a fox. A fox,
I would
is,
hope not. Yeah,
you know, and the good thing is that a fox is a predator. And you know, talking about the different species. Several weeks ago, I had Joel Greenberg and Steve Sullivan on from the Chicago Academy of Sciences, and we talked about the passenger pigeon and the big anniversary centenary. I guess is what he called it. I thought it was centennial, but he said centenary. In 2014,
right.
100 years since the passenger pigeon went extinct.
What was her name in the Cincinnati Zoo? I forgot.
Martha.
Martha, that's it.
And she died on September 1st.
Wow.
1914, which was just a couple of days ago.
I remember as a kid looking at that photo in bird books, you know, and it just, it was a powerful kind of icon.
But he also, Steve Sullivan, heads Project Squirrel. And his idea is to say, you know, squirrels are a bellwether too. They tell us the health of our environment, even though we think, you know, a lot of people think of them as rats with furry tails, they are out there being part of ecosystems.
Yep, yep.
Just as foxes and...
And that's the key, ecosystems. And I think that's what's happened, you know, in the last, what, 10, 20 years in terms of thinking about nature in metropolitan context, that we've got to understand it as part of that ecosystem. And even though we as humans have done so much to alter it, there's still systems there. And what can we do to kind of get the balance back a bit and think about all the pieces as they fit into a bigger whole and not just, you know, isolated individual species?
That's Jerry Edelman. He's president and CEO of Open Lands. I'm sorry, we don't really have any time to talk about the Lakeshore Preserve because we're... Sorry about that. It's just, you know, sometimes I just kind of go with... and I'm going to delay it just one more second because we got a phone call. Put on those headsets.
All right.
We have a question from Bernie in LaPorte County. How are you doing, Bernie?
So let me just say one thing. The family tabby cat is one that does a real job on the wildlife when you let them loose outside.
Well, I got to tell you something. We've had some feral cats in our backyard in Logan Square in Chicago, and for a long time, the birds just disappeared. They weren't going to have any of it, and now the cats have kind of disappeared, and the birds have come back. And you know, it's.
I've got a question. And it's funny how this program is coming about, but I've been curious. You know, like when you look around and you see these white flowers that I think came from England, and you see some other flowers that have taken over and are encroaching and drowning out other things. Is there people that just do a study? What's missing in the eco chain?
That's like, a really good question. Are you talking about Queen Anne's lace by any chance?
Like, say, for instance, like here in northern Indiana, we've got these white flowers, and they just smother everything out.
Do they look like do they look like lace or do they look like daisies?
They look like lace.
Yeah, Queen Anne's lace.
The point is, wherever they came from, what's missing over here that's not keeping them in balance? Is there people that study this?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, the Chicago area is one of the birthplaces of restoration ecology, really trying to understand how do we bring back our natural systems And how do you manage and control invasive species or very aggressive native species when things are out of balance? And, you know, we were pioneers really in prairie restoration, wetland restoration, savanna, this mix of forest and trees. And so there are scientists definitely who are doing adaptive management as well as serious research on figuring out just those kinds of questions, like Queen Anne's Lace as an example. I mean, that was brought over probably in the 17th century, you know, by the early English settlers who came here. So it's been around a long time. But, you know, again, what are the challenges?
And a lot of people think of that as a wildflower.
Right.
It's not a native.
Nope.
And it has been very successful. I saw a bunch of Queen Anne's Lace up at the Lakeshore Preserve the other day. So it's a great question, Bernie, And the point is that, yeah, we are studying this, and we continue to study it and hope that we can find some answers and bring back some of the natives. I appreciate you listening, and thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Again, our phone number is 773-838-9278. If you got a question for Jerry Adelman, let's get to the idea of the Open Lands Lakeshore Preserve. Now, of course, you were on the show in February.
Right.
And I have to tell you, it was really fun going out there in the dead of winter. And it was right after the big snowstorm, a few days after. And so we were able to get around. There still weren't 20 inches of snow on the beach. But we did that. But it was also fun knowing that I was going to follow up on it and go out there. And now you're going to open next Saturday. And I went there the other day, and stuff is in progress. You guys are working feverishly to get that done. That it must be a pretty intense time for you right now.
It is. I guess the operative word is feverish, you know, because we've had a pretty wet season, as you know, and that did set back our construction schedule a bit. You know, because this wonderful, extraordinary place, this over mile of Lake Michigan shoreline with the bluffs and ravines, is a focus for ecological restoration, which we've been doing now for several years.
Right.
And, of course, that's a process that goes on for quite a while. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been two burns so far, which is really critical in terms of the maintaining, you know, that ecology.
You say two burns?
Yes.
All right. So you got 77 acres there. How much acreage was burned in those burns? Do you know?
I don't, but a pretty good percentage because it was Bartlett Ravine and much of the bluffs. So I couldn't give you exact acreage, maybe two-thirds or so. But anyway, so the restoration's going on and will continue, obviously. And we're learning a lot because we don't know a great deal about the Bluff Ravine ecology. It's kind of the last frontier of restoration ecology. But what we've been doing is the infrastructure, which you saw, the trails, the overlooks.
Right.
You know, and this is a major, you know, mile long, over a mile of paved trail, you know, with these overlooks and so forth. And then developing the rain gardens and beginning the restoration of prairie savanna in that upland area. So it's not going to be 100% done, but done enough that we can unveil it to the public. And we're so excited about it.
I will be really honest with you. I got asked. And Amy Collins, who's your site manager, took me on a tour the other day so I could see how you had done. I happened to run into Bob McKeer, who took me on the was with me on the tour in February. I ran into Dan Perciarello, who's what's his specific job?
Dan is a consultant. You know, formerly was with the Chicago Park District.
Right.
He's been retired. And he's been really working closely with Bob, you know, coordinating all of the capital improvements, you know, the trail and other restoration efforts there.
Right. And so he's and he's a buddy of mine. So it was love him. And it was just amazing running into these people. So I had the camera and I just interviewed Bob again and did another little video. I don't know if you've had a chance to see it, but
I haven't.
There's
I look
on the
to
homepage
it.
Of my website, MikeNovak.net. It's a sort of a slideshow and we've embedded some video. You get to see some of the trails, see some of the stuff in process. There are a couple of marvelous staircases that you're constructing. That are going to give people access to the ravine, Bartlett Ravine, and to the lakeshore. You have this fantastic bridge over Shank Ravine.
Isn't that amazing?
Unbelievable.
It really is, yeah.
And considering the wet spring,
yep.
And when I went there and Bob and Amy in February showed me, said, here's a ravine. We're going to have a bridge over this.
And you said, right.
Yeah, exactly. I did. But it's done.
It is.
And it's got a 70-foot span in the middle of it where you left the ravine intact so you weren't sending pylons into the ravine.
I know, it was very interesting. I'm sure they explained to you how it was constructed. You know, put a couple poles down, build a little platform, and then continue that way so there's never heavy equipment down in the ravine,
uh-huh.
You know, which is really important because that would have done so much damage.
Well, as any gardener knows, the minute you start compacting your soil, you change the nature of the soil.
Totally.
And it can take years to get it back.
That's
and
right.
And you were dealing with a ravine. Yeah, it's degraded and you still need to do restoration, but you can't make it worse at this
exactly.
point. You cannot.
Yep. Well, we've been so lucky to have Bob as our chief operating officer and as the fellow who's really been monitoring and spearheading, you know, all of the work there. You know, he's an extremely talented landscape architect and has great experience in his previous life at the Park District with large capital projects, and just a great guy, but one who brings extraordinary experience and talent and insight to this whole effort, and invaluable. And Amy was a great hire, so we've got a good team.
You have a wonderful team, and it's interesting going out there and walking along and seeing the workers and I'm going to ask you another hard question
here,
okay?
Hey, you started with one, so
why not?
Can it get worse? I don't know.
Because when I toured the facility last Friday,
yeah.
What I came away with, despite the fact that you've got ADA trails, mm-hmm. So it's accessible to children and the elderly and
people with disabilities.
People with disabilities.
Which is rare in a nature preserve setting.
Yeah. Yeah. Which meant you have to have some footprint there, you know it.
Right,
but
right.
I still came away with the idea that the place is so fragile. The fragility of it just almost overwhelmed me. No, because now it might be because I know the history of it a little bit, and I know the battles you've had to fight to get lands. I know the pressures on the land from adjoining businesses and residences. I know the degradation of the ravines and the fact that, you know, walking down Bartlett Ravine where you've done restoration, mm-hmm. Well, you can also see where places are eroded and you're fighting like heck to just keep them from degrading further. The fragility of it just struck me, and it makes me wonder whether you have trepidation about opening this up to the public, even though it's supposed to be a public space.
We don't. I think we have a lot of confidence in the public, quite frankly, and the way it was designed, it takes into consideration the sensitive nature. For instance, those stairs, you know, there are two sets of stairs
right.
That connect the upland trail, in one case with Bartlett Ravine and the other with the John and Nancy Hamill stairs that go down to the lakefront. You know, how can you experience these bluffs? You know, you don't want people walking up there. First of all, it's very dangerous, and also mm-hmm. would be extremely destructive. And so in most cases, you never really get close to the vegetation and kind of can experience, you know, what the nature of that bluff ecology is. Well, those stairs allow you to do that. They were put in very carefully. You know, the native vegetation is being restored. So you're going to be going right through, but in a way that your footprint will not negatively impact it. The trail is just that in the upland. It's a trail, and it's paved, mm-hmm. and you know you're supposed to stay on that trail. You
right.
know? We're going to mow along the edge, and then there'll be the native prairie and savanna. Bartlett Ravine, fortunately, you know, it has a road going down it. We didn't put it in. It's been there for probably since the 1880s or 90s.
Uh-huh.
But it does provide access. And
well, you know, and Bob McKeer said in February when I was with him, in some way, it preserved that ravine.
It did. I mean, what we found about ravines is the key is getting light into them and managing water. Now, you know, buildings have been constructed close to the edge, and so we've got some challenges. We have some adjacent property owners who are working with us. We'll be putting in rain gardens and native landscaping to try to, you know, gather that water and put it down into the ground before it you know, sheets over the bluff. So there are lots of challenges, no question. But it's a site for passive recreation, not active recreation. So we don't have swimming. We don't have beach volleyball, whatever. But people can hike. They can bicycle. They can bird watch. They can picnic. You know, it's a wonderful place to kind of get away from, you know, the hectic kind of metropolitan environment that we all live in and experience nature in a unique setting along the lake. It's the only site like it, you know, of that scale. And so I think people are going to fall in love with it. We're working with school kids, as you know. We'll have 20 classes from third to fifth grade and high school doing their echo explorations this coming season from schools from Waukegan down to the city of Chicago. We have podcasts, you know, that tell stories. So there are lots of elements there that are trying to connect people to that site, its significance and its rarity. So, yeah, I think there may be some challenges here and there. Clearly, we're in an urban setting, but so far, what we've experienced with Bartlett Ravine Opened is that people are very respectful and appreciative, and it's such an unusual and wonderful, you know, treasure that they seem to value it.
This is funny. I'm talking to Jerry Adelman from Openlands. He's president and CEO. We're talking about the opening of the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve. Put your headsets on for a second, Jer, because in all of this, of course, we got into the details, and I've got Chris from Palatine who has a very important question. What's the question, Chris?
Where is this, and how do you get to it?
Okay, good question.
Chris, we are totally busted on this one.
Listeners that get to the point.
Yeah, I'm hearing this great thing. It sounds fantastic. I'm saying, okay, where in the heck is it?
Okay, well, I'm going to give you the easiest way to get there, and that is to go to our website, www.openlands, one word, openlands.org. And you'll find a whole section there on directions and parking and so forth. But it's in Highwood and Highland Park. It's the southern part of the former Fort Sheridan, bordered by Sheridan Road. The northern part was redeveloped in the early 90s. It's called the town of Fort Sheridan. That's the historic part of the fort. And there's approximately 250 acres there that the Lake County Forest Preserve District has, with a little less than a mile of lakefront. So this is the southern part, part of which has been redeveloped for Navy housing, and another section down the road will be developed for market rate housing. But Open Lands took title to the lakefront, the bluffs, the ravines, and it's really quite extraordinary. But again, easiest way, because there's a map and specific directions, would be go to our website.
And I'll tell you, Chris, if you can't get there, you can always go to my website because I have all the links up as well. And I've got links to Openlands and to the Lakeshore Preserve and to the directions. It's real easy to get to. They've got a map right on it that shows you just exactly where to drive and where to park.
And, Mike, if I could add that on Saturday, which is the kind of public grand opening, you know, free, open to everyone, all kinds of tours and birds of prey demonstration, art activities for kids, scavenger hunts, kite flying, light refreshments, all sorts of things. But there is a metro station, the Fort Sheridan Metro Station, and we're going to have shuttle service there every 15 minutes from that station from 11 to 2.
How far north are you from Ravinia?
Oh, I mean, we're just, you know, a few miles from Ravinia.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's very close.
Right there, yeah.
Okay, great. And now, is there going to be a general admission fee normally?
Oh, no, this is open free of charge to
always.
The public. Always, every day of the year. We open at 6:30 in the morning and close at sunset. And, again, it's adjacent to the Lake County Forest Preserve at Fort Sheridan, so over 2 miles of lakefront, which is pretty amazing. Yeah.
Considering that it could have been developed and lost forever.
Right. What happened was we were approached by then Congressman Kirk, now Senator Kirk, whose district it was in, and he said we're going to be redeveloping the southern part, the non-historic part of the fort, for Navy housing, market rate housing, and would we work with him to find a public agency or not-for-profit who would take the mile of lakefront, bluffs, and ravines to make sure that it wasn't a gated community, that it would be open to the general public. And for various reasons, we weren't able to identify anyone. Everyone said it had to be saved. It didn't kind of fit their agenda at that time. We went back to him, and he told him that. He said, well, if Open Lands doesn't take it, it'll be a gated community. It'll be lost in terms of general public enjoyment. And we said, can't let that happen. You know, and even though we're an organization almost 50 years old, we will be next year, and we've purchased thousands of acres, we're interim property owners. We always pass it on to, you know, park district, forest preserve, state, public agency. And our board said, you know, we can't let that happen. This is too rare, too special. So little of the lakefront outside the city of Chicago is open to the public, and at that scale, mm-hmm. especially with this ecology, you know, mm-hmm. it's unique. So we did, and we have a capital campaign that we're still working to complete, and we have our grand opening coming next weekend.
that's a good point. And by the way, thank you for
They only got one last statement.
Sure.
It sounds like Mark Kirk did at least one thing right.
You know what? You got to give him credit for it.
I won't give him credit for much.
You know, and here's what I would say about that, is that what we need to do now is remind Mark Kirk of the environmentalist he was in the 90s and say, you did this, we appreciate it, now you got to step up and do it as a senator as well.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks for calling, Chris. Bye-bye. And let me take one more quick one before I get back to some things that Chris brought up, and that is Jane in West Dundee. Hi, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Oh, my God, I can't stand it. I just love your show. My family listens to it, and you need to be on longer, please. Can't they put you on longer? And you have so much wonderful information. You're just so inspiring, and more people need to hear you and listen to your words of wisdom about our world. And I just love it, and I think you need a television program, too.
I think so, too.
Okay. I'll second that. Yeah. He'd be great.
And I want Jerry Adelman to be my co-host.
Excuse me?
Wait a minute now. You're in trouble.
You're all wonderful.
What about the sassy
all these years
sidekick?
Of support, now you get bumped.
That's the last time I give you a ride on a fire engine.
I got a ride on a fire engine last week, so thanks to Heather. So Heather would actually be the co-host. I think Jerry would be a permanent guest. Well, that's awfully kind, Jane. I really appreciate it.
It's not kind. You're very important to this world.
Well, listen, I think because you're so sweet, we need to send you something.
No, I don't need anything. I just want you to know. That's all. My husband wants you to know, too. So it's just wonderful. I don't need any presents. Send them to the whatever you want to send them to.
You know what I'll do?
A bunch of those catalogs.
Exactly. In your honor, I'm going to buy an extra catalog from Landreth Seed Company and give it to a friend.
Exactly. That's what I'm going to do.
All right. Fabulous. Thanks for calling, Jane.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Getting back to Chris's comment, which is very interesting, and what you brought up about the you guys taking charge of it. You're a 501c3. Are you 501c3?
501c3, yep.
Okay.
Founded in 1963.
Right. And like you said, this is an experiment for you to actually own property.
Right.
This has got to be a little tricky, and it's a grand experiment, and it's because this property is so interesting, it's unique. It must make you a little nervous to figure out how to fold this into your mission.
Well, it clearly is a new chapter, you know, in open lands history. And, you know, we've been around, as I said, since 63. We're one of the first in the country, actually, to focus on the large metropolitan area, you know, big city, suburbs, exurban fringe. Conservation was seen as wilderness or rural areas. So we were pioneers back then, too. We did the first rail-to-trail conversion, working with community groups, the Illinois Prairie Path, the first heritage area, the I&M Canal, on and on. A lot of firsts that we've done. The Madewin National Tallgrass Prairie that we provided the critical leadership for and so
Love
forth.
Love Madewin. Yes, what a great place.
Extraordinary
place. You know, and that's the other thing. You don't do things in a small way.
We don't. Well, we do small and large. I guess we see how this region is a web of green that's connected. And it goes from inner city neighborhoods with, you know, small-scale community parks and gardens and green spaces all the way to a 19,000-acre Madewin Tallgrass Prairie.
Not to mention things like tree keepers.
Hey, 20th anniversary coming up.
Which number are you?
417, mm-hmm. Reporting for duty.
There you go.
And I know you're honoring them this year at your luncheon.
We are.
Tree keepers, but the 20th anniversary is next year, right?
It's actually this year.
It is this year.
It's this year,
that's
yeah.
right. Yeah, because there's going to be a gathering of tree keepers this month, when I think when I'm out of town, which is makes
too
me
bad.
Unhappy.
Yeah, we're trying to have a reunion of all the tree keepers, as we can.
But I'm hoping that the Carrot Trees will invite me to their table.
For the luncheon.
And
well,
for the luncheon,
so
I could be there, too.
Good, good. Anyway, back to sort of, so we've done a lot of firsts. We've been pioneers. And always connecting people to the land at these different scales. So again, this is a first because we've purchased, you know, land all over the region. We've done a lot of ecological restoration, but we haven't owned in perpetuity any of these sites. You know, we're interim property holders. So this is a departure. But what we found is that it's actually enriched our work because it gives us a lot of insight into the challenges of restoration and management. Interpretation, educational programs, you know, firsthand, we're in the front lines doing it. We see it as a learning landscape, so we want to share our experience with scientists and property managers and, you know, people involved in environmental education and so forth. I think we're up for it. You know, it's been an interesting journey. It's not over. It's really just beginning. But I'm confident that it will be an extraordinary new treasure, you know, added to this wonderful set of things that are available in Northern Illinois for the general public, and that we're going to continue to partner with some wonderful organizations like the Chicago Botanic Garden that's helping us with monitoring. You know, is this restoration working? You know, what are the insights learned? Working with the Lake County Forest Preserve District adjacent to us. You know, with Highland Park and Highwood and, you know, Audubon, so many others who are kind of coming to partner with us to make this site, you know, the best it can be. Mm-hmm. And for all of us to learn and share those experiences with others.
And I have to tell you, I love Amy. She's wonderful. I love Bob. He's every time I stick a camera in his face, he just starts talking.
He's a natural.
He is.
Yeah.
You know, and all the folks that have worked so hard on it, they must be very excited about this opening next Saturday.
I think we're excited. We're nervous. You were talking about the weather earlier. You know, what kind of weekend are we going to have? Keep your fingers crossed.
But you know, I think I started to say this, and I got sidetracked, as I always do on this show. Amy said to me, you know, we might not have everything exactly finished. And Bob was saying, you know, everything might not be exactly finished. You think people are going to mind? I said, heck no. Are you kidding? The thing is so spectacular. If you don't have every T crossed and I dotted, nobody's going to care next Saturday.
I'm with you. Absolutely. And it is a work in progress, and it will be. But so much has been accomplished and to share and allows people to experience this amazing landscape and those views and just the natural beauty. And, of course, migration, you know, we're approaching it, and the birds there. We've identified already over 150 species of birds on the site. I suspect many more over time. So it is just a very unique and special place for a Chicago area person to experience.
And I think before we go, two things. First, I cannot emphasize enough how unique this ecosystem is and how lucky – not lucky – I guess we're lucky that it got preserved by the military, of all things.
Right.
The fact that it was there and did not get turned into condos is remarkable. And private beaches, as you said, it could have been a gated community. And then fortunate that we have organizations in Chicago like Open Lands and some of the others that you mentioned that stood up and said, we've got to make this happen because this would have been gone forever. We would never have known. And one of the things Amy was telling me about is now the work is on. You've done some restoration, but you still have a lot to do, and that's going to take place over years of time. Even just trying to figure out which plants are supposed to go there that have disappeared.
Because we know a lot now about prairies and prairie restoration and wetland and savanna and forest. Virtually nothing about these ravines. There have been interventions, you know, dealing with erosion and kind of problems. Lake County Forest Preserve has done restoration on two of their ravines, but, you know, it was early and we're still learning a great deal. So I would say Bartlett Ravine is probably the most focused and serious restoration ever undertaken in Illinois of one of these ravines. And,
well, there's so few of those ravines.
Right. I mean, there are only 30, 35 of them along the lake. Most of them are in private ownership with homes along them. A few have small parks, but they're very small and they're local and not really open to the general public. And so when you think of Illinois with our lakefront, we have about 60 miles. approximately half is in the city of Chicago. Most of that is open to the public. It's wonderful. It's great recreational opportunity and just scenic beauty. But it's landfill, you know. And important as habitat, nevertheless, a lot of the restoration or recreation work that's happened, you know, to create friendlier environments, especially for birds, is critical. But up here, we're talking about a native landscape that was rare in the first place, and that can only be experienced at that scale at our site and with our neighbor at Lake County Forest Preserve, the former Fort Sheridan, in its totality. You go further north, you've got Illinois Beach. That's spectacular, mm-hmm. heavily visited. But it's like Indiana Dunes. It's dune swale, whole different ecology and topography and so forth.
You know,
forth.
It's interesting. I was talking to Amy. I said, well, you must be doing a lot of reading from the chronicles of early settlers to see what kind of plants were here. And she said, they're really not very helpful. Wasn't a lot written about the flora at that time. And she said by the time people did write in the 1890s, in that general time frame, she said the land had already been degraded. It's kind of hard to know what was there originally.
You know, and we historically kind of have seen the ravines as places to put stuff you want to get rid of, landfill, throw your leaves there in the fall, whatever, you know, out of sight, out of mind. People haven't really studied them and appreciated them as they should over the years. And so many have been severely abused. The watersheds in which they exist, have been overly developed. So there are all sorts of issues that we experience on site, but that other units of government and private property owners who have ravines are dealing with as well. And so, again, we see it as a learning landscape. I guess open lands, you know, was interested in it for a number of reasons. One was the rare ecology and the opportunity to restore it, understand it, get insights into its sustainability. But then public access. I mean, you know, a mile of lakefront with this rare ecology, with mm-hmm. bluffs in some cases that are 70 feet above the lake. I mean, wow. You know, it's just
the
breathtaking.
The views, they are.
And then the educational opportunities on all these levels. I mean, for school kids developing these programs that are very focused, tied to curriculum, but also just for the general public coming, but also for the scientific community and the land manager community to get insight into what works, what doesn't work, what kind of adaptive management do we need to, you know, undertake over time? So it's got so many dimensions to it that open lands just couldn't say no. We said, we got to do this. You know, it's too important.
Well, let's take one more phone call before I let you go, and that's Marilyn in Skokie. Hi, Marilyn. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi. It's nice to be here, and thank you very much for putting on this wonderful information about the lakeshore. One of the things that I wanted to say was that I was actually at the ribbon cutting dedication and took some photos. This was back in September 13th of 2009. So I got kind of a sneak peek at what was going on there. And I would say, don't worry about it not being finished. Nothing had been done at that time. And I found it completely breathtaking. I took a number of pictures, put them on my Facebook page, and I've had commenters as far away as England saying how beautiful it was. So I would really encourage everybody to get out there. I know I'll be going again to see what you've done in the interim.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for being such a great ambassador for us.
And go ahead.
No, it's my pleasure. Please, you go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, Marilyn, that you'll like it even more because what they've augmented this with, and it's not to take away from the natural beauty, but that bridge over the ravine is stunning, and the stairways are beautiful, and they have their own kind of beauty. And the fact that you could bring something in like that enhances the park and not take away from it is just wonderful.
Well, I'm really looking forward to walking up and down on those stairs and going to see the crystal clear water that was there before. So, again, thank you so much, Open Lands, for taking on this new challenge. I've been a big supporter of yours for a long time, and this new chapter is just what you needed.
Well, we appreciate all your great support. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Marilyn. Appreciate
it. Sure.
Mike, if there's one thing I could mention, too, in terms of experiencing this place, and that's the public art, which I hope you got a chance to see.
Oh, my goodness. We almost missed that.
That's just extraordinary. And it's not a sculpture park.
No.
But we did a competition, and artists submitted proposals. And the whole idea of creating discrete works that give point of entry, that connect people to the themes and the issues. And we're really excited about it. Subtle, but really quite wonderful. The color poles, you know, the blues and grays along the lake to show you what the colors are during the year. There'll be a podcast that kind of talks about that.
I actually have a photo of that art piece on the slideshow on my homepage. And I also have the other one, one of the other ones, which is a driftwood sculpture called Erode.
Right, by Vivian Visser.
Yes.
And again, kind of talking again about the movement of water, the critical nature of that in terms of sustaining, you know, these systems and so forth. Did you see the Soil is Alive, the piece that Sharon
I have a photo of that on the website, too.
And
it's these wonderful. Oh, yeah.
Isn't that, I just love that because you don't think of soil. We take it for granted. Now, you think of it all the time.
Unfortunately,
in your program,
yes.
But most people don't. And, you know, you have a handful of soil and you might have as many little microbes in there as you have people on the face of the earth. And so Sharon worked with scientists and really figured out what kind of microbial life, microorganisms would exist in the soil here. And she selected some and did these marvelous bronze reliefs bronze colored. They really aren't bronze. And are embedded in the retaining wall there. But just to really, you know, bring that dimension of sustainability alive, the critical nature of soil and that it is very much alive and has a whole set of dynamic organisms, you know, that we never imagine because they're microscopic and you don't see them.
And I'm so glad you brought up the art. I almost missed it and that would have been terrible because it's one of those little several grace notes in the preserve because you turn a corner and suddenly you've got this beautiful art and there's the mural under the
mural's big, breathtaking, isn't
the
it?
The mural's fabulous and you have to walk down Bartlett Ravine to see the mural.
And now there's stairs going down that I think will be completed. They weren't when I was there a few days ago. There was almost.
Well, the picture I have up on my website shows them in progress.
Oh, great, great.
And finally, last but not least, people can still contribute.
Absolutely.
To this, because you're still trying to raise funds.
We are. We've been very fortunate. We had a wonderful grant from the Grand Victoria Foundation for $4 million, which really jump-started this, and also the Hamill Family Foundation for $2 million. Just extraordinary. We've never undertaken a capital campaign like this before. We're now up to about $10.3 million. Our goal is 12 or more. And you know, so we have naming opportunities. That beautiful bridge you mentioned is not named and could be.
So, at
all levels, large and small, we welcome contributions.
I think
and
you
would
ought
be
to, go
happy
to go to Stephen Colbert.
Hey.
I mean, it sounds like the kind of thing that he'd love to have named after him.
Not a bad idea. I like that.
He's got the pack, you know.
Hey, yeah. Well, hey, keep thinking. That's a good suggestion.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you can do that. I've got all the, you can go to Openlands to find out about that, but I've also have that information on my website, mikenovak.net, on this week's show. You can write to Director of Development, Jennifer Mullman, and I've got her email address or the phone number. You just pick up the phone and say, hey, I want to contribute to the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve, and they'll say, yeah, sure.
And Mike, gifts at all scales, you know, even though, you know, we're looking for those big naming opportunities, you know, a $25 contribution helps too.
All right. Listen, Jerry Adelman, always a pleasure to have you here. You know, Bob and Amy were afraid you wouldn't have anything to say and that I was.
Well, I'm usually kind of timid.
Yeah. But you filled things out well. I appreciate it because I didn't have anything going on the show today.
And you're always so reticent too.
Yeah, me too. But no, it's pleasure. And I heartily advise everyone, go out and see the preserve. Grand opening next week, but it's open now into the future, and it's free and open to the public, and it's accessible, and the kids are going to love it, and they're going to learn something about nature that they didn't know existed. I had a friend of mine come with me who lives in Wilmette and said, I had no idea this was here. No idea at all.
And, of course, officially it was off limits for over 100 years. You know, it was a military base.
Yeah. And that's what people will say. I had no idea this exists. All right. Thanks again, Jerry.
Mike, thank you.
We will talk real soon. In the words of the song, wake me up when September ends. Well, if that happens, you'll miss out on a lot of good gardening. Not to mention a lot of prep for next season, which is why you need a copy of the September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine to remind you why fall is the best season of all in Chicago in your Zone 5 garden. Now, for instance, our very own Beth Botts writes on how late September is the best time to plant garlic for next year. We talked about that earlier on the show, and I know that Heather's going to get some and maybe plant something, right?
Absolutely. Anyway. I might have to yank one of the earth boxes from out back now that those have gone with their...
We might do that.
But I might...
See what happens.
Do that.
Beth has the scoop on the best varieties and the best way to ensure that your crop is successful. Now, if you're one of those lazy gardeners, my favorite kind, who want to see if they can keep their plants alive in their containers over the winter, there's a story about how you can protect your precious plants without having to lug them into the garage or crawl space. Then there's my column on the inside back page. You can lug that into your bed and read it with a flashlight under the covers. I've done it myself. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago, but it's a lot easier if you subscribe. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to ChicagolandGardening.com.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. If you have mature trees in your yard, you just might want to have the Care of Trees phone number handy. Why? Well, they can't restore your power after a big storm, but they do have 24-hour emergency service, and they can take care of your damaged trees. Many people don't understand how dangerous it is to remove or prune storm-damaged trees yourself, especially if a tree falls on a car, other structures, power lines, or even other trees. The Care of Trees offers 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely while minimizing further risk to your property. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life, so invite the certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Make this your best gardening season yet. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. Invest a bit of time now to ensure a bountiful harvest and beautiful landscape throughout the season. And include Milorganite, eco-friendly, all-purpose fertilizer as part of your formula for success. Use Milorganite organic nitrogen fertilizer in all your planting beds. The low-nitrogen, slow-release formula makes Milorganite goof-proof and good for the environment. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Available wherever garden supplies are sold.
From our friend, remember, Daniel Glickin, who wrote in, and he wrote this with Corky Siegel, mm-hmm. Siegel Schwall.
Who did they have in mind?
Well, this was supposed to be the theme for Santo the bus driver, who
yes.
calls us all the time.
Yes.
So
we love you, Santo.
We love you, and glad you're listening to the show. And thanks to all the people who've been listening to the show. And thanks. Let's go to line one and bring in David Cleverden, who's out in Caledonia, Illinois. How you doing, David?
Good morning. Good morning, Mike.
Pleasure to talk to you. He's at, am I pronouncing this right? Kinnickinnick? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, we say Kinnickinnick Farm.
Kinnickinnick.
Yeah.
Okay. Kinnickinnick.
Yeah.
I never knew how to pronounce that word exactly. And I know they have Kinnickinnicks out west in Washington State and here in Illinois, and it's a word that pops up every now and then, and I assume it's some kind of Native American word.
It was the name of the creek that goes through our farm, but it's originally an Algonquin word that means mixture, and Indians have used it to refer to their smoking mixture.
Ah, we'll get to that later. but David, I chatted with you yesterday in preparation for this, and you said you were busy milking a goat with some kids.
That's right.
Not goat kids, but children.
A bunch of kids were out here, and we were milking a goat.
Tell me about that.
Well, we began bringing animals onto our farm. We're vegetable farmers and have been since 94. But we began bringing livestock on the farm when we realized 2 years ago we had to begin making some changes in what we were doing, driven by some wrenching changes, I guess, from the climate, from the weather, beginning in back in 05, where we had a legitimate big deal drought, and then 2 years later, floods. We just were up to our ankles in mud almost all summer long, and then 2 years after that, we just didn't have a summer in 09. It was just a cold summer, and it brought that ushered in a devastating tomato blight. So 2 years ago, we realized we had to begin changing the way we farm, and we began saying, well, we have to diversify a little differently, and so we began to introduce livestock, and we still are introducing livestock on the farm. But, yeah, the goats was one. And the other thing we've done to diversify, one of the other things, is we've set up an agritourism division of our farm, I guess you could say. We have these incredibly elegantly rustic tents that people can stay on our farm, and we were booked up this weekend, and we have about 15 kids all out there gathering eggs and milking goats.
Wow. So this is the reality of doing an organic farm, maybe any farm these days, but you happen to be certified organic.
Right.
Well, last time you were on the show, which was back in March, you know, we talked about how you were the trailblazer all those many years ago in the 90s. Which...
Yeah, we were certified organic in 94. And I've been certified organic ever since. And we're a small farm, relatively small farm, and so we have the capacity to change, and we are exercising that. And some vegetable farmers that haven't are now getting out of the business, actually.
Really? And you're sticking with it, but now what are they finding they can't overcome?
Basically the weather. The weather has become very volatile, very severe, and extremely... just jerks you around. I mean, you can have, you know, cold one day, rain, sun, blazing sun, hot, and it's or year after year that we have these abrupt changes. This is no longer a temperate climate anymore.
It stopped being fun, huh?
It stopped being fun for a lot of people. We want to keep on farming, and we decided the only way we could do this is not put all of our eggs into the vegetable farming business anymore, and so we are diversifying out.
But that's not what you're doing is really, I would think, not any different from farmers who use conventional means.
Well, most farmers who use conventional means keep doing the same thing year after year after year after year. I mean, conventional farmers plant corn and beans.
Okay.
They are locked into that and can't really change because of they have a habit. For one reason, they have a huge capital investment in single-purpose machinery. So they are stuck. We can change.
Hmm. And that was the question I wanted to ask you, and you've answered it. Is, you know, how is the organic operation different from a conventional, and why the weather has such an impact, and it's because you can't grow the same thing year after year.
Yeah, well, yeah, we have to change. The farmers, you know, the conventional farmers go down one route and one route only, and it's close to a monocropping route. We think they're, you know, that's down that way is the destruction of the soil and farms and communities. We're trying to diversify our operation and basically touch more bases.
Well, but if you're doing less farming, how do you overcome that? I mean, if you're
not doing less farming, we're just spending our time differently. I mean, we're doing livestock chores now, which takes away from doing some of the farm. But we have livestock products. We have eggs to sell, which we didn't have to sell, you know, several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We have chickens to sell, which we didn't have several years ago. And this year, we're starting some hogs, some pigs. So we'll have one of my favorites, Italian pork sausage, to sell in the winter markets in Chicago.
Well, and of course, you do provide produce for the farmers markets, Green City Market. You're there on Wednesday, right?
We're at the Green City Market on Wednesday. I'm on the board of directors of the market. We're there on Wednesdays. We're at the Evanston Market on Saturdays. And we do the great market in Chicago now is the Green City Winter Market. Farmers now have a place to sell product, November through May.
Well, fabulous. David, always a pleasure. I want to continue to have you talk to me on the show. I'm fascinated by the whole weather thing. I have to put you in touch with our meteorologist, Rick DeMaio, because he's got very strong opinions about weather in Chicago and around and across the country. And maybe I can hook you two up. But thanks so much. You can go to my website, mikenovak.net. or go to pronounce it again.
Kinnikinnick Farm.
Kinnikinnick. So emphasis on the first syllable.
Right.
Kinnikinnickfarm.com. KINNIKINNICKFarm.com. Great talking to you, David. Have go back to milking those kids.
Thanks, Mike. Talking to you.
Bye-bye. And I meant goats. And, okay, before we go, Heather, we got a weird...
We got the best tweet ever.
Okay.
Apparently now, if you go to hashtag MikeNowGroupie...
No.
Mike's got a groupie.
Well, a hashtag groupie.
A hashtag groupie at that. And my skinny garden, she had me laughing so hard, I had to, like, I nearly imploded because I had to suppress it all and be quiet. And, yeah, she said that they can come in handy on a lot of levels, groupies. And I have to agree with her.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll find me a new used car. All you groupies out there, Mike needs wheels, okay? So
we just need a groupie who has her own used car dealership.
I wonder if anybody does. Oh, well. All right. Well, until next week, go green or
go home.